on.
Gotcha. I got it.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Boomer and the Babe Show, giving voice to 78 million boomers from coast to coast and border to border. Each day we have a different guest and a different topic. Our guests always have a nugget or two for anyone, regardless of where you are. We hope you enjoy the relaxed conversational style of the show. Nothing fancy, just boomers sitting around the table talking about stuff. Now, here are the Boomer and the Babe, Pete Peters and Deborah Brown.
Yes, indeedy. Here we are again, the Boomer and the Babe on Blog Talk Radio. It's Tuesday, September 22nd, 2010, and we are broadcasting from the Boomer and the Babe Enterprises Studios in Phoenix, Arizona. And we'll get into our guests here in just a minute. But before we do that, I always like to tell people about BoomerandTheBabe.com, www.BoomerandTheBabe.com. Go in and sign up for our free online magazines. Take a look around, see all the things that we're interested in and doing, so maybe be able to help you a little bit in your business activities as well. And I'm Pete Peters.
And I'm Deborah Brown, and I would just like to clarify that today is actually the 21st of September.
Oh, my, I did it again, 21st of September. Well, I'm glad you're here, Deborah. Otherwise, I'd have had that totally screwed up as I sometimes
do. Do that all the time. I don't know what calendar you're using.
I don't. It must be the whatever calendar. Anyhow, today's guest is the Ronald, Ron Naraki, and Ron is the managing partner of BNI. Is that right? BI Solutions Corporation. I'm getting it all mixed up today, Ron. BI Solutions Corporation. It's an investment company, real estate investment company. Ron, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Boy, it's nice
I'm
here.
I'm sitting here stumbling over my eye teeth because I put my tongue up there and I can't see what I'm saying. So I think I'm going to just sit back and relax and let you and Deborah talk. Deborah, why don't you go ahead and start talking to Ron?
Well, I'm very glad to have you back on our show. And why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself to get us started? Because that's typically what we need to have that information, build some rapport with our listeners, and them to know exactly who they're listening to.
Well, before I even do that, I've got at least, you know, I'm looking around and seeing all these listeners all over, not only the U.S., but I've got some in Europe as I sent out an email to some of my friends and colleagues over there. So it's actually afternoon there, early evening. So we've got to say good morning. We've got to say good afternoon. We've got to say good evening. And I don't know, you didn't comment. I'm great international audience. I'm wearing my The Ronald official golf shirt. Is this okay for radio?
I mean, it looks really good. It looks really good, Ron.
You've got to be very, very careful how you dress for radio.
Well, and it's so nicely pressed, too, I might add.
Okay, well, I try.
What is that squeaking I'm hearing?
Sorry about that. I will try to quit moving around. You'll notice that I brought my kneeler with me, and it does squeak.
Are you going to be praying today, Ron? Is that why you have your kneeler?
Well, you know, whenever I'm in front of such a great audience, you know, I kind of just drops me to my knees, and I want to, you know, just give thanks for a great sunny day, at least sunny here. It's probably dark in Europe. But, yeah, it's my kneeler. It's good for my back, and I recommend one to every baby boomer and anybody that has back problems. But for whatever reason, they haven't been very popular. But I use it all the time. You see me carrying it at the meetings once in a while.
I have seen you bring it along, yes.
So that is the squeak. That is the squeak. It is not me squeaking, all right? I have oiled all the joints. I had my fish oil today. So I should be fine. Okay, so back to Deborah's question. Let me start out a little bit non-traditionally. I'm the very thankful third of two kids born to an immigrant family. Okay, I'll explain that. So my parents arrived back in 1951 on Thanksgiving Day as immigrants with very little in their pocket and two suitcases. Well, assuming they could find jobs here in the great U.S. and my mother wasn't too old by the time they got to the point where they could afford it, their plan was to have two kids. Well, the bad news was their first child was stillborn. So, you know, big tragedy, obviously, big tragedy for my parents and big effect on her life for the rest of it. But nonetheless, that was good news for me because I'm the third. Had she not been stillborn, I might not be here today. So I really am thankful for occurrences like strange bad things that look like absolute horrible occurrences, sometimes they turn out to be well, you know, turn out well for some of us anyway. But I grew up in the ghetto in Buffalo, so I was one of those kids growing up in the poor neighborhood and taught some of that old, good old traditional thinking. Pete, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I'm not sitting near you anymore. That's right, it's me. Me and you. Get a good education so you can get a good job. You get a good job, that means you'll get a good retirement and a pension, and life will be good. The one good thing they did teach me, though, is frugality, which has been important, and I wish I could teach that principle to more and more people over time. But somehow, through hard work, good saving, and, well, some real good investing, I managed to leave the ghetto and was a millionaire by the age of 30. And had the opportunity to move to Europe in 1994 and took that opportunity. It was a two-year opportunity, and after 13 years, I finally moved back to the U.S. Boy, that was a great opportunity to change things around you. I mean, the status quo at that time and what we now call it New Europe. Back then, we called it Eastern Europe or Central Europe. But boy, was that an opportunity just to shape the lives of people, make changes in laws. And anyway, that's a whole other chapter in itself. But by the age of 45, I left corporate world and semi-retired. And that's where I consider myself right now, semi-retired. I'm not retired yet, which means I'm still spending more than 40 hours a week. And but the retired portion of it is I'm only working on those things I like doing. And boy, there are a lot of things I like doing. And if somebody wanted to put labels on what I'm doing today, some people would say I'm a housing provider, and that's probably the term I use most often. Others would say I'm a fund manager. Others would say investor, author, and probably very importantly for the future, the developer of the TACT program. Some people just call me the Ronald, and that's a name I did not come up with. Actually, one of our investors did. It's kind of become our trade name. So, and then I should add, and hopefully we'll talk about, I'm soon to become a radio show host like you guys. I'm, my heroes
true.
Out there.
All right. Let's start with your fund manager for BI Solutions Corporation. Tell us a little bit what that is all about, if you don't mind.
Okay, and I'll try to do it without squeaking here, because I just heard another little squeak, but I'll try without.
Well, we're not hearing it, so don't worry about it.
Okay, that's good. That's good. I'll keep the microphone away from my kneeler. The BI Solutions Corp is really a fund, and it's structured as similar as I can get to an REIT, a real estate investment trust, without all of the expenses and investment that would be required for a small real estate investment trust. So we've structured it that way, and in the future, we expect to be one. The fund currently only invests in Maricopa County, so properties we own are only in Maricopa County right here in the Phoenix, Arizona area. Although some of the solutions and the name BI Solutions, and you actually kind of tripped over that a little bit because I will use both. I'll either use BI Solutions, the official name, or Buying and Investing Solutions, and that's why the "and" kind of comes in there once in a while. But so we don't have products, we have solutions. Some of those solutions we do actually offer throughout the U.S. and some internationally. And our core business really is two things. We do lease-to-own homes, allowing people to own a home that couldn't otherwise get bank financing. And secondly, we do private mortgage lending on investment properties so that others can invest in real estate that don't have, again, bank backing. Banks will not back investment properties very often. So we kind of become an alternative to a bank. So that's what the fund is all about. And basically, I run it along with a small team of some great people.
All right. Now, Ron, you said that you is not a real estate trust. Is that what you
said? A real estate investment trust, REIT, correct. It is
okay.
Structured
what
similarly.
What is the difference, or what is a real estate investment trust, and how does it differ from BI Solutions?
Okay. Real estate investment trust is an actually registered, and it can either be publicly traded or not, fund, real estate fund, that has a specific income-generating objective. And you'll never have a real estate investment trust that is not geared to an income-generating properties. So you'll have real estate investment trust, or REITs, let me use for short, REITs are also used, but doesn't pronounce it very well. But these REITs invest in, could be apartment buildings, could be healthcare facilities, office buildings, hotels, any number of different diversified real estate assets, and they will generally concentrate in some geographic area. You will, you know, if it is hotels, it may be U.S. hotels, it might be international hotels. So they are very large pools of money where their investors are getting a share of the profits and a share of the cash flow, the dividends that they get. And we are similarly structured. The difference is that an REIT is a very formally registered, a lot of bureaucracy, a lot of accounting, and the expense of doing an REIT would just be prohibitive to the number of investors and the amount of assets we have today. So size is probably the number one difference, but otherwise very, very similar structure to what we do today.
Very good. Okay. Deborah, do you have anything you want to kind of go down the road here? I've got a couple of callers that I'm going to take into the screening room, and we'll go from there.
Okay. Well, I'd love to. I was going to say that it seems to me that you are maybe the keeper of the American dream. So people that can't quite get the keys any other way maybe can come to someone that's doing what you do and get a little help. Does that make sense?
It does. It absolutely does. We, incidentally, do use kind of the tagline to BI Solutions. We say solutions for living the American dream.
For heaven's sake.
Us, yeah. To us, that definition of the American dream of owning your own home and being able to use that as kind of a foundation for building your long-term retirement portfolio and having the financial wherewithal to be able to retire comfortably, that foundation of living the American dream by owning a house is exactly what we're after. And you're exactly right. Today, there are so many people that cannot get bank financing for a number of reasons, and we are an alternative. And probably if I had one bit of encouragement, because of that, we are just swamped with clients. So we are just overrun with more people that would love to get into our program than we can possibly handle in the short term. We will continue to grow to handle more.
So how do you like that that image there where people that can't get the keys come to you and say, I'm trying to get the American dream, and I think you've got the keys?
Yeah, very much. I hadn't thought of it as the keys, if you will. Because we focus on that term solutions just because it's part of it.
Exactly.
But exactly right. No, you're exactly right. And what we've done through these rather challenging few years of the Great Recession, and unfortunately I don't think it's over yet, we have kind of expanded different ways of doing it so that we've got, when somebody comes to us, traditionally we had one solution, and that was a lease-to-own program. We've expanded that, and we are now doing owner financing so that somebody can refinance sooner. So you're absolutely right on, and that really is our core focus. But in some cases, it may not be homeowners. It may be a person that says, gee, I want to make the next step and invest in real estate because prices are cheap, and I'm trying to get a bank loan to go buy an investment property, and I can't do it.
Right.
And we can provide those keys through our financing as well.
Excuse me, Ron. Ron, we've got a – are you there?
Yes, I sure am.
Okay. Ron, we've got a caller, Sandy Sloan, that's on the line. I'm going to bring her on. And she has some questions about investing and people that are in need of homes. So let's see if we can get Sandy on the line. Sandy,
hi.
Are you there?
Yes.
Go ahead and ask your question of Ron, please.
Two-part question. Do you have rent-to-own properties available to help somebody who might be interested in that, and or do you have homes and the investors available to help people?
Okay. The two-part question, two-part answer. We have currently no homes available. And I was just sharing, as you were getting online, I was sharing with Deborah that the demand for what we do is just going through the roof. People want to have their own home, and we happen to call it lease-to-own as opposed to rent-to-own. And there is a slight difference in my view, but a technicality. All of the names, kind of lead us to the same place. But we have no homes available. All of our places are filled. We are continuing to put offers in on properties to buy more. and we hope to expand this. We've got a list of clients they're working through one by one, and we have a number of investors interested in the program, and we can't really kind of sign them up onto a property until we have the property picked for an individual client. So we actually have now switched the program to a different way of doing it of maybe what others would think of. We don't go buy a house, fix it up, and then hope to sell it or hope to put a lease-to-own client in there. We actually will work with the client, approve them, and then say, where do you want to live? What kind of house do you need? And we'll be looking then for a number of properties. They look at them. They see them. We then fix up the property that fits their needs so that they can move into the house that they wanted, not necessarily into the one or two that we might have had available. But the demand is huge, and as a result, we do not have any available. We are currently, we've got bids on a number of houses, and we will continue to buy houses, and I'd love to be able to buy, you know, 1,000 in the next year or so, but unfortunately, not enough investors and not enough banks to want to work with us yet. And that's a key word.
Well, Ron, I was just going to add, oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I said thank you.
Okay.
Oh, good. Okay,
pleasure.
Good.
You know, basically, we will be, over time, taking on more clients. We are, at the moment, swamped. But feel free to contact us and let us know what you're looking for. And as we can get more properties or get the funding to do more properties, we will be helping as many people as we can. Again, that's our mission.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sandy.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Deborah.
Well, I was just going to say, it sounded like great questions on Sandy's part, but also in the answer, I heard the word bank as maybe a fly in the ointment.
Boy, it is. It is. And that is probably, you know, we saw a resurgence in the residential real estate market throughout the country, but, you know, I focus on the Phoenix area, and it's kind of the worst hit and probably the easiest example to we could take Las Vegas or a lot of the California markets are going to be similar. They're going to tend to lead us back out of this housing recession. We saw a great resurgence for a little over a year. We hit bottom in April of 2009. Prices were ticking upward. Demand was going way up. And since then, it has absolutely stalled. And the reason is banks have choked the system. And I am unfortunately very critical of banks and yet recognize that banks are the key to getting us out of this. It's not the government. It's my working with and other investors working with the banks to implement some programs to change their way of thinking, to get them out of the mode of wait till the government comes up with a program and then we implement it. The government said, we're going to give you first-time home buyer credits and or tax credits, and then they expanded it to add repeat home buyer credits, and that really helped move the market. But it added to the market movement that we already saw. Investors were buying homes earlier. The prices are so darn cheap. But what happens eventually? People run out of cash. They need to get leverage from the banks. The banks cannot lend. And let me just put a couple gloomy statistics on the table here for a second. The FDIC has taken over 125 banks to date. All right, I'm not aware of any, you know, yesterday or today that would add to that number. But that's just this year. There's 1,000 more, and I have a list of them, that are on the high risk of FDIC takeover. That's 10% of the banks in the country are at high risk of takeover. The FDIC can't handle it, and the banks need to recognize that if they worked with us, specifically on the TACT program that we've been kind of working on for well over a year now, they could fix their own problem and get us out of the banking crisis and get us out of the housing crisis. And that's where my optimism comes through, that the end is out there. It is not going to go on forever.
I'm in kind of missing a little of the conversation here. We've got a caller that's on the line, and I'm having trouble getting them on into the screening room. But nonetheless, I heard you were talking about the banks and so on and so forth, and maybe
Right. This
is a little out of context from where you and Deborah were talking. But we've heard recently that the latest thing is that the recession is over. The recession is over. It's just moving really, really slow, but the recession is over. were you approaching anything in that discussion there at all, Ron?
I hadn't touched on it directly, but let me comment on that. The definition of when we enter recession and exit recession is kind of one of these consensus economists, certain measures take into account, et cetera. The thing they cannot say today is, all right, maybe we left the recession, and if you pictured everything dropping like crazy and then it starts ticking out of that kind of like a check mark, how long does that continue? How slow or how quick is that pace? And when and could it reverse? In other words, instead of having a kind of a V-shape or a U-shape, is it possible that that recovery starts and then stalls and heads back into, if you will, another recession or a second phase of the same recession? If you asked me 6 months ago, I did not think that would happen. But now looking at the real estate market, and by the way, the real estate market led us into this recession, it appears that the housing market is heading into a second dip. We have seen not only the volumes drop dramatically, we have seen foreclosures start to rise, we're seeing the number of bank-owned properties way up. And as a result, for the last month, month and a half, we've seen prices heading back down. We are reaching the point that possibly in 2 to 3 or 4 months, we could be back to the price levels we saw in April of 2009. So at this point, I'm fairly gloomy on the short-term prospects, and I'm afraid that barring some major change, like getting the TAC program done faster, or the government doing something really big and dumb, we probably will slip back into recession. Unfortunately, it is not moving fast enough. So that's, my opinion and my advisor's opinion. I'm not kind of a lone wolf. I do take views from a number of experts out there.
Now, do you think that this is a somewhat regional recession? Is it more? Is it different in Arizona than it is, an example, in the state of Washington or that type of thing? Or are there different...
Good point.
Different areas that are responding differently?
Fair point. And there I'm going to probably say I'm probably not qualified enough to be able to tell you in each of the regions, but I can get one general statement. The recession has been deeper, and especially the housing crisis, of course, been in deeper in certain areas. And, you know, we can name the top four: Arizona, California, Nevada, and Florida. Has been very, very deep. And therefore, when it does bounce back out, they have a longer way to recover. The other areas did not drop as far and probably not only don't have as much to recover, they may not have as much foreclosure baggage and price drag. But on the negative side, or my concern, is that banks are, for the most part, national. Yes, some of them have regional charters, but the big guys all have a national reach. And if a company, one of the big five banks or big six or seven, depends on which home you want to, where you want to cut off the list, decide they're not doing any mortgage loans, and effectively they are not, then that affects the entire country. If they're not going to lend to small business, and despite being kind of forced into it by the federal government, then it's not going to help in Washington nor in Arizona. So there is, unfortunately, a national influence of the banking drag that I talked about. So I am concerned that the banks are currently dragging us in. The good news is the banks can get us out. It is not the government. It's not some sort of policy. It's not some foreign country having to bail us out. The banks can get us out of this mess. They just need to understand the mechanics of what they've created.
How are they going to do that? What do they have available to them that they can do that, Ron?
Okay. Very simple. Banks, a couple points I want to make. Banks work on the fundamental of leverage. They borrow funds, and those funds they can lend, and when they have loans on their books, they can borrow again using those loans as an asset, just as if it were borrowed funds. So if they bring in $1 million, they can lend somewhere to the tune of $9 million of that $1 million. It's this leveraging. I borrow against each loan I make, which allows me to borrow some more, which allows me to borrow some more. So it's, I don't want to call it pyramiding because that sounds terrible, but in essence it is. I make $1 million loan, I now can borrow $900,000 to make a $900,000 loan, and et cetera. So that's one principle that's kind of gotten forgotten. Boy, that didn't sound good. But has been forgotten in this whole recession. And by the way, that spiral downward causes the same problem. It really does spiral it downward. Now when you have a non-performing loan, you have to wind way back. Well, the banks still have assets. The problem is, in the vernacular, they are toxic assets. A good performing loan, they can go borrow against. A toxic asset, a loan that, for example, is in short sale, or they've already foreclosed on a property, or somebody's missed two payments on their note, they can't go to the Federal Reserve and say, I want to borrow against this toxic asset. The Federal Reserve says the opposite. No. You need to create additional reserves for that. So here's the, if you will, getting us out of the spiral. The bank needs to transfer those toxic assets off of their books and convert them into performing loans. And that, by the way, is exactly what TAC stands for, is toxic asset conversion and transfer. It's not difficult. It's just that it's against the policies that the banks put in place over the last year, year and a half, 2 years since the housing bubble burst. So they put policies in place to stop them from doing what they need to do to fix themselves. And we know it works because we do it. The banks. I say the banks. The banks themselves, they do not need any government permission. They don't need new rules. They don't need new regulations. They can do this on their own. And it's exactly what we did when our portfolio, our fund, started having serious cash flow problems as our clients defaulted. Because we had the same problem that banks have when a client walks away for their property, whether it's on a lease to own or we had financed it, we have the exact same problem as banks. So they can't say we don't understand their problem. We are, in a private sense, a bank specifically focused on real estate. So if banks have a real estate problem, you bet we had one, and we fixed it.
And you fixed that by?
Well, very simply. Let me share kind of a summary of the strategies that banks use when they have a problem property, one of these toxic assets. What do? Well, they put it up for sale, and they hope that some other bank is going to lend some money so that somebody can buy that home. And I call that the put up and hope strategy. Put it up for sale and hope that somebody else is making a loan. And if the banks aren't making loans, that hope is pretty hopeless. The strategy we picked is to say, well, wait a minute. We own the home, or we own the note behind the property. And if we can provide financing, whether it's our lease-to-own program is financing, we own the home, we'll allow a future homeowner to move into that home, and if you will, gain title through our program. They're on a lease program. Part of that money goes toward purchase. They ultimately purchase that property when they're qualified to get a different financing than ours. So we are financing our lease-to-own program, and we're financing owner financing, because what we do is we say, all right, no banks are lending, so why don't I just say, I have a property, I will sell it to you, and here are my interest and payment terms for you to buy that property. Somebody gives me a call, usually about 10 people, and they say, well, saw your ad there. What's your interest rate? And, I had a bankruptcy a year and a half ago, or I foreclosed 6 months ago. Am I qualified to buy this? So that does not disqualify you. Give us your application, and assuming they qualify on basic grounds of having the income and those kinds of things, we will finance that property. So we don't wait for a bank. We don't kind of put it up for sale and hope. We put the financing in with the sale, and that's what the TAC program is all about. Very, very simple process that works, proven to work. We did it. 95% of the investors that are now in good shape, private lenders as well as actual property investors, they use the same strategy. They don't sit around and hope that banks will lend, and it works.
So let's say that somebody comes to you and they want to buy a house that is, let's say it's $200,000.
Yep.
Keeping keeping numbers simple.
Correct.
And they've recently had a foreclosure. They've
yep.
recently had to give up their home to the bank, whatever that might be.
Yep.
Can they, in essence, ask you to do something with that bank so they can stay in their own home?
Yes, that is one of the solutions we have. We didn't talk about that one, but that is one of the solutions we have. They, if they're still in that foreclosure process, in other words, the bank still has the note and they're, you know, probably behind on payments. They're maybe in a, they're usually in a short sale, or they should be. We will actually work with that bank to buy that property. Now, in all full disclosure, and we make sure everybody is very clear on this, the house will be lost. They will no longer be the owner. Because at the time we buy that property, they have lost their ownership. But by moving them back in, if you will, kind of theoretically, because they never left, in our lease-to-own program, they're able to stay in the same schools, live in that same home, don't have to tell all of their neighbors that they lost their home, and repair their credit, work through us through our lease-to-own program, rebuild their down payment, because they probably don't have any cash left. So in our lease-to-own program, we help them build their down payment. Yes, they will be able to rebuy that same house, usually about 3 years from now. The timing will depend on what the bank regulations are at that point in time. The good news is they did not have a foreclosure. They had a short sale on their record. So much, much less damaging than a foreclosure. And if they were able to avoid bankruptcy through that process, again, they're, you know, five steps ahead of where they would have been had they said, I just can't make it. I've got to file bankruptcy and just kind of walk away. They still need to live somewhere. So why not live in the home that they've been living in, that they really like and want to be in? So, yes, that is one of the solutions we offer.
So when a person is actually in that home, then, there's really no break in the continuity of where their physical address is.
That's correct. That's correct. That's correct.
Now,
yeah, unfortunately, it sounds good as we're talking about it, but it is not an easy process. We have to get the bank to understand that working with us under the TACT program, that enables them to take this bad loan, this toxic asset that's on their books, convert it to a performing loan, because we're now going to back that loan. This person is not able to make their payments at the old level. We're buying that home, and we take responsibility for it. So the bank now has a performing loan, and they can now, again, start fixing their own balance sheet. So it's a win-win-win. We win by getting an additional property. The bank wins by converting one of those toxic assets into a performing loan. And the homeowner now stays in their home. They go from homeowner stage to leasing stage and then back to homeowner stage a few years down the road. But it's not easy.
So now what happens if 2-3 years down the road that individual is in technically no better shape than they were when you found them? What happens to them? Can they extend, or is there a limit
yes.
as beyond which they cannot go?
No, we will extend. I mean, once somebody has, if they've been able to make their payments to us, we consider them a good client. We will continue to work with them. We'll encourage them to save, to kind of rebuild. And keep in mind, as much gloom and doom as we see today, despite my short-term reservations, 3 years from now, this country will be in far better shape than it is today. So their job situation, the financial picture, the banking sector will have been fixed, at least partially, and their ability to stay in that home will be much higher. But no, we do not kick them out. We have every interest to help them, as we talked about with Deborah, live the American dream. We want them to re-own that house again. And we'll do everything we can, either by extending the lease or possibly switching to owner financing, because it's easier to refinance a loan than it is to get a new loan. So, again, that's one of the solutions that we offer. Once they've been in the house for a while, we're open to that idea.
So let's kind of just take this scenario, if you don't mind, Ron. We'll just go right
sure.
down the road. Go right down the road with it.
Yep.
I go from being a homeowner to being a renter, in essence, of my
right.
own home.
Correct.
Am I responsible for all of the upkeep, all of the groundwork, and if the hot water heater goes out, who's responsible for those things that could go wrong in a house?
Boy, excellent questions. And you know what? So many of our clients are so excited about our program, they forget to ask those. But that's why I differentiate it. When Sally called earlier and asked about the rent-to-own, we call it a lease-to-own as opposed to rent-to-own because they are, we treat it as their house, even though we own it. We want them to be responsible for the maintenance, take care of the house just as if they owned it. Now, you touched on the one, what happens if? I don't have a big cash reserve and the hot water tank goes out, or even worse, the air conditioner goes out, or, oh my God, the roof blows off in one of our storms. Fortunately, we put a homeowner warranty on each of those properties for that reason. Their risk for any major occurrence is $55. And one of my clients in the past month had just moved into the property, and the air conditioner gave out twice. We had two different problems with it, and so we actually, because it's their first month, covered that $110 for them. It was not their fault, wasn't our fault either, but, you know, what the heck. It's something that, you know, it does happen. It's not expected in the first month, so... you know, we basically, as part of the deal, just said, look, you know, we'll cover that $55 twice. But they didn't have air conditioning out for more than 24 hours each time. So I was pretty pleased to be able to say that, you know, that big occurrence that could have cost, you know, would have cost them as our lease-owned client without that, would have cost them probably somewhere to the tune of about $2,000. You know, we actually covered the $110. So we do have a backstop to help those people.
And the chances of them having that $2,000 are slim and none.
That's
otherwise,
correct.
They conceivably wouldn't be in the position that they were in to cause the need for your services anyhow.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So,
and we recognize that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we don't want to make it a rent-to-own program where they call us and say, my toilet's leaking, can you fix it? Well, no. You know, you've got a lease program where you're responsible for the property with this backstop. So that's the difference that I didn't touch on in answering that phone call, is we call it a lease program, and for that reason, people are responsible for the property with some fail-safes. But very, very good question. We've been doing this for a number of years. We think we have an excellent program out there. And, well, obviously, by the number of clients that we have knocking at our doors, it is an excellent program. So our challenge is to get the banks fixed, number one, and secondly, more investors interested in helping finance some of these properties.
Now, my next question, then, as far as you need to have get the banks fixed.
Yes.
I understand that because we've had that discussion before,
yep.
And I think you probably were having a discussion with Deborah while I was off in the mm-hmm. on the other lines. But my question, I think, is a couple of things. First of all, when they come into your stable, if you will, for lack of a better
yep.
term right now, is their house payment less than it was with the bank, A?
Yes.
And and that less than it was with the bank also includes the lease portion as well as what?
Basically, the lease portion covers everything but their utilities. So they, in the past, would have had a principal and interest payment to the bank, probably, because in most cases, their taxes and insurance would have been in an escrow account, or technically it's really an impound account at the bank. So the lease covers those. Plus, it covers their homeowner association. Plus, it covers the homeowner warranty that we put on that property. So the key reason, so the payment's more inclusive. There's more included. But their payment is lower for one absolutely huge reason. We are buying that house and transferring that benefit to them at a much lower price than when they originally bought that house. There are very, very – I can't imagine any property that we buy today is not cheaper than the owner bought it for earlier. Going back maybe to 1950, there might be some examples, but chances are that they owe more because they've in the meantime done some upgrades and taken extra loans and those kinds of things. So for the most part, we're buying the homes much, much cheaper. And commentary on the bank piece, we're buying them at fair market prices. So the bank is selling to us under the TAC program at a decent price. They are not dumping them at 20%, 30%, and 40% off of fair market value. by, you know, just dumping them. So that's what the banks have been doing. It's caused a downward spiral. That's a whole other, you know, avenue of that tact program. But we're buying them at a fair price that's far, far below what that homeowner bought it for. And again, you know, there's nobody's fault. It's just this is where we are.
You hear the stories about the houses that are up for sale on the courthouse steps.
Yes.
That are in foreclosure.
Correct.
Is that a likely place for you to find homes?
No,
for
we
your,
don't.
For your program?
We don't. We have financed those purchases in the past. We're actually not at the moment. We've decided to focus strictly. Certain things, you can't do everything. So we're not currently financing any trustee sale purchases. There's a couple, probably, you know, good news in some of that. It was a decision we made because of focus. But in hindsight, it was a good decision. The courthouse steps went from nothing happening, you know, 2% of the properties purchased were at the courthouse steps. That rose dramatically over the last year to the point that very often people are going there assuming they're getting a great deal and get into the bidding frenzy and end up paying more than we would pay by buying it directly from the bank, you know, a week earlier as a short sale or 6 weeks later as a foreclosed property, because it takes a while to get it on the market. So it is just a little too zooey. That's number one. Number two, it requires cash. We have to walk in with $50,000, $100,000, $150,000, $200,000 24 hours after buying it, and it just makes no sense for our program. Our investors would not make the kinds of returns they can make if they're buying strictly for cash. So from that standpoint, we are firm believers that real estate has to be leveraged. We have to have, you know, loans, whether they bank or private, to make this transaction profitable to both the homeowner as well as to the investor.
And I would imagine then at some level the same holds true for these late night commercials that you see. That's obviously they're obviously directed at people that are in a panic or are really trying to make flip them and turn them deals on homes when they say that the house is regularly sells for $329,000, bidding starts at $72,000. I mean, that I've seen that thing late at night, and I'm going, what is this? But there are. Is that a real estate company doing that, or are they working with the banks? What's going on there? Do you know about that?
A whole variety of things. And my advice to 90% of the population is to turn off your TV. That keeps you out of trouble. I find the radio and the internet are great mediums, but the TV is just a place that can get you into a lot of trouble. It's very, very passive. It doesn't, you know, it's not conducive to thinking, to asking questions, to, you know, kind of checking things out. So that's the first tip. But given you listen to those, they are very often companies that have a profit motive to convince you to get into their program. They don't tell you the downside. For example, right now the credit relief stuff. They'll show our illustrious president doing a talk about how credit card defaults are rising, and then they make it sound like they're implementing something he asked for and coming up with, you know, we can fix your credit. And, you know, no problem. Everything's going to be great. We're going to wipe off all that debt, and you can start all over. What they don't tell you is that you'll have no credit, no ability to have any debt. So, of course, you're going to be starting all over, just like you were 18 years old and didn't have a credit card yet. So from that standpoint, they don't tell you the downside. They are generally, and I'm sure there's some good information out there, but, you know, they're selling real estate courses. They're selling you a program. They're selling you some product that's product and profit motivated, and I'm always very, very cautious of those things.
Right, right. Well, Deborah, do you have anything else you want to interject?
Well, yeah, I was waiting for you guys to get to that last little spot there where it's like, okay, I'm jumping in here. And what I want to know is, you sound like a big thinker to me, Ron, and I know you are, and I know you're working on a number of new initiatives that have that whole thought process in them, and
right,
including some books and the radio show that you're going to be launching here for us on our network. So
right,
why don't you start telling us about some of the things that you're doing?
Okay. First, let me get there, not in particular either order of events just as they come to mind. The first is the book. You touched on a book. I will be launching the Ten Commandments of Investing through the Boomer Series books. And I'm pretty excited about that. And actually, it was conversations with you that encouraged me to do it. The material was written, about 80% of it was written already. I had launched a number of articles on those topics, sharing those Ten Commandments. And I feel like, the financial version of Moses out there. And actually, the little cartoons that were done along with the articles, that was the intention. As I brought those Ten Commandments investing, they're the fundamentals. What are the things we need to stick with? And to me, what's important about that book, which I'm targeting to have done by year end, that's important is it gets people to focus on the fundamentals. We sometimes get caught up in those late night TV commercials and how things will be great and you can own this great home with zero down and all of these pipe dreams and forget the fundamentals. If it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. So getting people back to those fundamentals, and there are 10 basic principles of investing that I share, and I tell a story around each. So if I just gave people the list of 10, it's kind of like reading the 10 commandments in the Bible or Quran or the Torah. People read it and say, oh, okay, I know those things. Well, how you doing with them? Well, not terribly well. That's the
I haven't killed anybody lately.
That's right, but I did borrow some paper from work the other day and the pens, but I'm working at home and I don't need those at work as much as I need them at home and et cetera, et cetera. Kids could use them at school. That's called stealing. Anyway, on to the second book, by the way, which is a little bit further down the road, but the inspiration for the radio show, which is Wealth DNA. This is a concept that I've been struggling with for probably 20, 30 years, is what differentiates the 1 to 5% of the truly wealthy people in the world versus the other 95 to 99% that talk about it but don't get there. And it turns out that it's pretty simple. And again, it doesn't mean it's easy to implement, just like everything that's simple. But I will be sharing in that book and in the meantime some articles about those topics, those obstacles that stop people from becoming wealthy. And one of the, if I wanted to pick one key point from that book would be never take financial advice from somebody poorer than you are. And so often we listen to our, it's like getting financial advice from my parents. Love them. My father's still alive. At the age of 98, and he has, very little financial wisdom to share. He never did. It's just not his bailiwick. I mean, he was a carpenter, and his wealth DNA is down pretty low on the scale. He wasn't brought up with that. He's good at saving and skimping, but his wealth DNA is pretty low. He's done fine, fortunately, because of some of the basics that they learned in their life. The other thing is that radio show that will be based on that, starting next Monday, very next Monday, on the Boomer and Babe channel of Blog Talk Radio. We'll be starting 8 o'clock in the morning, every fourth Monday initially, a Wealth DNA show. It will not be only covering the book. Basically, Wealth DNA I'm using as an overview to say what are the things we need to do in our lives to become wealthy so that we can retire comfortably, so that we can help others, and I feel pretty good about what I'm doing today. Not only, I could just give up and say, hey, you know what, the heck with everybody else. I'm just going to live a comfortable life and ignore what's going on. Let me share some of the things I'm doing and the excitement I get by sharing, if you will, the wealth I've accumulated by helping others live the American dream. And guess what? That creates wealth for more people, not only the ones that get a house, but the investors that work with us. And yes, I'll get paid in the meantime. So it's kind of like a profitable charity. It's just really exciting. So some of those principles and those ideas I'll be sharing. I will have some guests on there periodically. We'll talk about the economy. We'll try to stay away from politics, but economy and politics tend to kind of mix a little bit. And we'll share a lot about the Ten Commandments. We'll share the obstacles to becoming wealthy, and I'm really excited about this whole idea. It's taking my articles to the next level. Instead of just publishing articles, which not everybody knows how to find, this gives kind of a voice behind those articles and a chance to interact a little bit more. than a static article out there. Seminars for investors. I have been doing on and off, and unfortunately off for almost the last year, seminars to help people get some knowledge about things out there, about ways to invest, about ways to accumulate some wealth that may not be known by everybody. I mean, everybody knows about stocks and bonds because somebody is selling them that. Some commissioned person is talking them into this annuity or this stock or this bond or this mutual fund, and this is the answer to your prayers. And 5 years later, well, it wasn't quite the answer, but I now have the next one. So this program and if you will, the seminar, the radio program and the seminars are geared to sharing some ideas that I can ethically say that I use them, and they've helped me. The seminar that I'll be having on October 14th, which is the next one scheduled, by the way, is titled Learn to Earn a Higher Return. And if somebody says, well, are you doing this, Ron? The answer is absolutely, because it is half of our business, number one. And secondly, I started at the ripe old age of 15. I did my first private mortgage loan at the age of 15. I didn't know it was called that at that time. And I probably didn't charge enough, and I didn't have some of the safeguards in place that I have today. But it worked out just fine. Everybody was happy. And I earned a much, much higher return than anybody else could have at that same, you know, that same point in time, given the economy and given what banks were paying for deposits. And lastly on my list, I would say, and probably most importantly of all of that, is this TACT program. We've talked about it a little bit. I just get excited. When I get into a conversation on the TACT program, I was targeted 15 minutes to explain it to somebody and then shut up and listen. But I got to tell you, I have a hard time doing that. I get so excited about the prospects. I know it works. I've done it. We fixed our own fund. We went from a huge negative. I mean, most people could not imagine living on the negative cash flow. They would give up. They just, you know, give their house back to the bank and just say the hell with it. I can't do this, or file bankruptcy. We were in a huge negative cash flow when our clients started defaulting. But we had an asset. It wasn't a toxic asset. To us, it was an underperforming asset. We just needed to find new clients, new people, you know, people that wanted to have their own home, and if you will, put them into those properties. Yeah, it required a little fix-up and paint-up, in some cases appliances, but some of our former clients thought that they, you know, went with the package when they leave a lease-to-own home. You take the appliances like you would out of a foreclosed home. They didn't read the contract and the rules, and anyway, those things happen. But those are minor. We give a next family an opportunity. And we started doing exactly what we now term the TACT program. We just didn't think of it that way. We did what was logical. We didn't sit there and say, oh, my God, the banks aren't lending. I'll never be able to sell this property. Or, gee, you know, people, they're losing their houses. How big can they afford a lease-to-own program? And how do I find them? And, you know, there's so many rentals out there. So I could sit back and whine, but instead we got proactive and said, what do we need to do? And lo and behold, guess what? We, in essence, by fixing our own portfolio, came up with the program that will fix the banks. So it really does work. We have proof. We are proof, as well as most other investors that are doing well today, and we just get to get banks to sit up and listen. But those are the things on my horizon in the very immediate future that I'm excited about.
Well, the wealth DNA kind of reminds me of like a rich dad poor dad conversation, you know, like something that is different or communicated differently. Is that kind of what you have in mind? I'll tell you what, tell us what DNA stands for.
Sure. It is an acronym, and a little bit of poetic license to that acronym, but the idea is that DNA are obstacles. Each of those three, the D, the N, and the A, are letters that represent the three key obstacles that stop us from being wealthy. And in all due respect, and absolutely, you know, kudos to Robert Kiyosaki and to I'll think of her name in a second, co-author, who lives right here in the valley. And that terrible, I hit a blank, Sharon. Anyway, great, great book. And you know, true inspiration. And probably without that, these concepts would not have gelled in my mind. So it's different, but yes, it is down that same path. It's let's communicate the basic principles and some of the ideas in a different way, but I view them from the obstacles. What is stopping people from becoming wealthy? The D, and believe it or not, most people will think, well, that's not a problem. I have the D. It's called desire. Consciously, people sit there and say, yeah, I want to be wealthy. Oh, yeah, I'm doing everything I can to be wealthy. No, you may say you want to be wealthy, but you are not doing those things, and your subconscious is programmed for poverty. Most people's subconscious through their life, through coming up through, whether it's poor neighborhoods or families without, very high DNA, wealth DNA that is, have been programmed for poverty. And their friends, the ones that don't have as much as they do, caring about them dearly, want to make sure they don't do better than they do. And they program them, their subconscious, to poverty. So desire is really changing your subconscious thinking and wanting to be, set your goals to be wealthy. So that's the D. The N stands for knowledge. And yes, that's where I've taken a little poetic license, because I do know that knowledge starts with a K. But, DKA didn't sound very good. And secondly, you don't say the K, and everybody would wonder what the hell a K means. So knowledge is the N. If you didn't have wealthy parents, then I can guarantee that through your years of schooling, you did not get the knowledge you need to have a strong portfolio at the time you retire. It's just not given to you. I mean, it's just not in the books. It's not in the schools. So that's a ongoing life journey to acquire the knowledge about investing. And it's not just acquiring it through your whole life. It can't be like a PhD that just keeps going to school because they're afraid to go to work and, they just want to get more knowledge. But if you ultimately never work, it doesn't do anybody any good. You had all this knowledge that wasn't shared. So that's where the A comes in. It's the action. It's making sure that as you get that knowledge, try it, do it, learn from it. There is nothing like experience for learning. Just any textbook will not help you as much as trying it and doing it. Yes, you will have some losses. I have lost more in my life than 99% of the people will ever earn. And I'm proud of that, because that means I've got more foundation for knowing what not to do, and I'd like to share those so you don't have to go through that same pain.
Well, Ron, that's all good stuff. I tell you, we're looking forward to having you as one of our show hosts, and also looking forward to your book when it comes out. Why don't you give our listeners, as we're wrapping up here, coming down towards the end of the show, give them all the contact information. Tell them how they can get hold of the Ronald at BI Solutions. Also tell them about when you're anticipating having the show again, and I'll let you give the give basically your little sign-off here today with all your contact information.
Sure. First of all, let's start with the contact. The telephone number is 623-249-4792, and it is off the hook if you try calling me now. I'm not going to try to take calls while I'm on the radio. But 623-249-4792. The website is very easy to remember. It is www.theronald.us. This is our U.S.-based business, so it is U.S., not .com. And the email is just about as simple. It's ron@theronald.us. So that's the basic contact info. If you don't have a chance to write down some of the info about our upcoming show, then just give us a jingle or an email, and we will put you on our list and send out the information in the next couple of days. The radio show starts this coming Monday the 27th at 8 o'clock in the morning, Arizona time. So those folks in Europe, that is 5 o'clock in the evening. So that's 8 o'clock Arizona time. And that is on the same channel you are listening to right now, www.blogtalkradio.com, Boomer and Babe. So it will be listed along with the other Boomer and Babe shows, and this is going to make it much, much easier for your listeners to tune in. And frankly, our audience is very much the boomers. Yes, everybody, younger and older, will benefit, but we really are kind of thinking from a boomer perspective. That radio show will air every fourth Monday at 8 o'clock in the morning, again, Arizona time. The next seminar, you'll be able to catch us at Entrust Arizona's headquarters, their Knowledge Center. And again, we can send you that exact address. That's in the Phoenix area. And that is on October 14th at 10:30 in the morning. And by the way, just as a reminder, there will be one more radio show in addition to the one that I'm starting that will talk a little bit about that seminar and the things we're doing for IRA-type investors. And that'll be on KFNN 1510 on October 6th at noon. So again, all of those things I will be keeping ultimately on our website. They're not on there yet. We will share them with you by telephone, by email, and keep you posted. And no, you will not get any spam, so you sign up to hear more about what we're doing.
Well, I tell you, that is a lot of information, and again, it's available on your website, or will be on your website shortly. And as far as Blog Talk Radio programming for the Ronald, you can follow us right here on Blog Talk Radio and get all the information from our site, which, of course, is www.blogtalkradio.com/boomerandbabe, and all of our upcoming shows will be listed there as soon as we get the information up on them. Thanks again, Ron, for a great show and a lot of great information, and good luck on your new show. Well, you're going to be on your own on Monday. I'll just be sitting here running the board and doing not much else except listening to what you have to say. So good luck on that, and I'm sure you're going to do a great job, and thanks for being part of the Boomer and the Babe Enterprises family. We certainly do appreciate that as well. Any closing words, Deborah?
I would just like to say thank you, and you've got a wonderful voice for radio. I think people are going to get not only great value, but they're going to enjoy it.
Well, and my mother told me I also had a great face for radio.
Very good. Thanks again for joining us, Ron.
My pleasure.
you've given listeners a lot to think about and a lot of good knowledge that they're going to be able to put into their mental univacs and have it come out some other time. You've been listening to the Boomer and the Babe Show on Blog Talk Radio in Phoenix, Arizona, where we bring good conversation to the world. Today we brought you information and conversation with Ron, the Ronald Naraki of BI Solutions, also the new book DNA, Wealth DNA, and the new radio program Wealth DNA here on the Boomer and the Babe Network. You can listen to the Boomer and the Babe Show live every Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock right here on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, we do much more than host this radio show on Blog Talk. We also publish ebooks, publish a free online magazine. Go to www.boomerandthebabe.com and see everything that makes up the Boomer and the Babe Enterprises and everything we do. Be sure to make the second half of your life the best half of your life, and have a great day, everybody, and we'll see you again tomorrow with an introduction of another new author and another new book. Thank you much. Have a great day, everybody.
Right.
To the Boomer and the Babe Show, where we bring interesting conversation to the world. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, where we tweet as Boomer and Babe, and on Facebook as Pete Peters 47. As always, you can friend us on Blog Talk Radio or sign up for our newsletter at boomerandthebabe.com. Email us at host@boomerthebabe.com with any of your comments. Remember, at 50, you're just getting started.